it's also encouraging to be here with a horse that's potentially the favorite and coming off a very impressive win in the Florida Derby. So hopefully it's a case of bringing the right one as opposed to bringing several.
Powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for racing and breeding in the Mid-Atlantic. On the web at theracingbiz.com. On the radio, on ESPN Richmond, it's Off to the Races. Here's Nick Hahn.
It's the genius, the father of soul, Ray Charles, bringing out a tray of mint juleps a little bit early for us on this edition of Off to the Races. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for spending a little of your Saturday morning with us. The joint is jumping this morning. Yeah, we're jumping in Maryland. We're jumping in Virginia. We'll have Al Griffin, the president of the National Steeplechase Association and the director of racing, co-chairman of the Virginia Gold Cup. We have to bring him on this week, as we have done throughout the steeplechase season, because the Virginia Gold Cup is next week, always held on the same Saturday as the Kentucky Derby. Foxfield is today, where they'll be jumping over and jumping over the timber and the hedges, and we'll also have a little bit of steeplechase racing from Maryland a little bit later on the show. Liz McKnight, the co-chair of the Maryland Hunt Cup, also on the show. John Piazzik will join us to handicap a little bit of the racing action from Laurel. Evan Hammond, the former editorial director of the Blood Horse, will give us an update of his thoughts on the Kentucky Derby, where his mind might be right now. And we'll get some other quotes. You heard Todd Pletcher there in the open. Is it fierceness? Is it Sierra Leone? Everybody seems to think these it's a two-horse race, perhaps. We know better. Anybody that's followed the Derby over the years understands that. But let's get into the three-year-old picture and recap the Preakness. Preakness is 3 weeks away. Should be four. And we'll talk about that, I'm sure, on later editions on how the Triple Crown is scheduled. You know my stance on it. But the Preakness is in 3 weeks. Last week, there was an automatic bid available. The Preakness future wager is open, by the way. You can wager on the Preakness today, all the way through this week, through 6 p.m. on Derby Day, right before they open the gates for the Derby. So, future Preakness wager open now. One of those horses listed among the 32, actually 31, and then you get everybody else is a 32nd entry, is the winner of the Federico Tessio. And Frank talked about Frank Vespi, who'll be in his usual spot at the bottom of the hour, talked about this race, got a pretty good field in this race, 11 going to the starting gate. Familiar voice, voice of the Preakness, former voice of Colonial Downs, Dave Rodman, has the call of the Federico Tessio.
Top of the stretch, and it's Speediness. Speediness has run. Speediness kicks away from them. Copper Taxon inveigled and lat long to the center of the track. They are followed by Corolo Rapido. Speediness now put to a drive with a furlong left to go. Copper Tax is reaching. Here comes Copper Tax. Copper Tax on the outside under a full head of steam. Copper Tax keeps on rolling. Speediness trying to hold. Speediness, Copper Tax. Copper Tax to get up in the Federico Tessio Stakes.
Yeah, chased him down. Gary Capuano has his entry for the Preakness. If he wants to go, Copper Tax. I think I said there were 11 in the race. There were actually 10. One scratch, Mission Beach scratch there. But congratulations to Rose Petal Stables. And, yeah, decision to be made by Gary Capuano. $8.40 for the win and the Federico Tessio. So we know at least one that could be headed to the Preakness. Muth also looms big, actually getting more favoritism right now than either Sierra Leone or Fierceness out of the Baffert barn is Muth. So Baffert, of course, has a great record in the Preakness. Let's cue up some music for Daryl Wood here. Not the usual music. We decided to go a little bit different. He's usually the boxer. This is Eli Cook with his drummer, Chuck Crenshaw. They're going to be playing at Shenandoah next week on Derby Day. Good morning, Daryl.
Wow, you are throwing me a curveball there, Nick.
Yeah. Eli Cook, I've seen him in person playing Fridays after 5 in Charlottesville. I think he's out in California right now, according to Chuck. And, we got your Eli Cook update as well. Tell us about all the events at Shenandoah Downs racing today and tomorrow and the next weekends all the way through Preakness weekend.
Yeah, no, we got heading into our busy time of the season here this spring. The rain's cleared here, it looks like, today, so we should be in pretty good shape. But, yeah, we're all focused on next Saturday, Derby Day, and looking for the biggest day ever here. We're going to be simulcasting the entire Churchill Downs card for the first time ever. So really big expectations, and we've got a whole bunch of, you know, other things to draw people, from miniature horse races to, like you mentioned, the Eli Cook Band's going to be playing here. We're serving mint juleps, the first time we've ever served anything other than beer and wine. So, yeah, we're looking to have a really good time. And the neat thing is that for the Derby itself, we're going to let people onto the racetrack surface and to be able to watch the race on our infield Jumbotron so they can get close and intimate for the experience. So, yeah, next Saturday all day, all the way through Derby time, it'll be fun here.
I'm sure you'll have the video of the race. The question will be is where's the audio coming from? But for our Harrisonburg listeners, especially at JMU, a great place to go watch the Derby and catch some live racing action with the harness action. Our listeners, WHBG in Harrisonburg, I'm sure maybe looking for plans. And yeah, I didn't know about the mint juleps. That's going to probably entice a little bit of traffic up I-81.
Yeah, it's still we're still kind of a novice audience here, and people start learning about racing and how betting works here. But for the folks in Harrisonburg and the Valley here, you know, it's graduation weekend up at JMU, and remind folks that they can bet the Derby in advance and have up to 6 months to cash the winning tickets. So no excuse if you got a graduation event that day, come out early. We open the betting windows at 10:30 next Saturday, and again, 6 months later, you can cash your ticket still.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. Daryl, how about today? What do you have on the slate today?
Yeah, we've got four $25,000 Virginia certified races. This is a way to reward horsemen that have entered the residency program, which means you've got to host a baby horse for 6 months minimum before they turn 2 years of age. And, you know, obviously that helps the agribusiness in Virginia, the equine, every facet related to raising a horse economically. So it's a reward for folks for supporting the Virginia breeding program. And we've got four $25,000 races exclusive to those Virginia certified horses today. So folks can catch us on simulcast anywhere, all the major online betting outlets, all the Rosie's gaming emporiums in the state, and at many other OTBs around the country. So really looking to push big here for the last 4 weeks of the season.
Have a great weekend. Have a great weekend next weekend, and we'll talk to you next weekend.
We will.
Great. Daryl Wood. Quickly, Daryl Wood is great in a leadoff position. I mean, he's just he's a real pro. What a great way to lead off the show, getting you up to date with racing at Shenandoah, as I call it, Shenandoah Downs. Just a great place, a great race venue. If you haven't seen it yet, go out there and check it out. Want to reach out now, and we have Al Griffin, who is the co-chair and director of racing for the Virginia Gold Cup. He's also president of the National Steeplechase Association, and I tell you what, went up to Middleburg last week, and we'll have a recap of the racing at Middleburg. It was exceptional, an exceptional venue. Again, one of these venues in Virginia, tucked away, kind of hard to see, not on the main street. But when you get there, you're just like, wow. And that's what Middleburg was last week. We got the Foxfield races today. We have the Virginia Gold Cup next week. All this in the midst of the Triple Crown being upon us. And Al Griffin joins us now on Off to the Races. Al, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Nick. How are you?
Doing great. Don't worry about this rain. I think it's going to dissipate before you go over the jumps here. You need a little bit of water on that course anyway at Foxfield with the even though you have that wonderful irrigation system. What a timely move it was to install that. Over the last couple of weeks, we talked Middleburg, we talked Foxfield with Kelsey Cox, and a nice card at Foxfield today with the Daniel Van Cleef and the Goodnight shirt. I mean, people are going to be looking for that number two horse. That number two horse wins the sixth race today. That's going to be a big moment in Foxfield racing history. Let's start maybe with the Gold Cup next week, because if you had made plans for Foxfield, it's just going to be a little bit too late. But for the Virginia Gold Cup, for our listeners in Harrisonburg and Richmond, tell us a little bit about the Virginia Gold Cup and the preparations being made for that big day.
Well, the Virginia Gold Cup is part of the series, if you will, in Virginia, but it's different. You mentioned Middleburg a little while ago. Middleburg and Gold Cup are 12 miles apart, and yet they're at opposite ends of the spectrum. You have a really beautiful course set up, and you know the crowd there is mostly, I'd say, local. The Virginia Gold Cup, just 12 miles away, you know, we've had crowds of 50, 60,000 people in the past. It's paramutual in racing, so it's different than the other race meets in Virginia. And as such, it runs under the auspices of the Virginia Racing Commission and the National Steeplechase Association. There are opportunities to go to it, ranging from a $50 general admission ticket to going to the 1922 Club in a catered event, for I think it's $250. So there are a lot of ranges of being able to go, and depending on your predilection for just having a great day in the country versus, you know, being a horseman involved in the handicapping of horses and the betting that goes along with it, those opportunities all exist there.
The late Glenn Petty, executive director of the VTA, told me a few years ago that the Virginia Gold Cup was the largest crowd assembled for a non-NASCAR event in the state of Virginia. Even coming through COVID, what your response has been now that COVID is behind us. It's such a big event. Tell us a little bit about the recent growth of the Virginia Gold Cup and the venue itself.
Sure. Well, and first of all, Glenn Petty, great friend. We truly miss him in racing. The Virginia Gold Cup worked hard to get parimutuel wagering. We went through the process of going through the state legislature, et cetera, and created our license, if you will, for steeplechasing. But, you know, you just had on Darrell Wood talking about harness racing. The whole state benefited from the foresight of the Virginia legislature to create opportunities for racing in Virginia that were not major infrastructure like Colonial Downs. So Gold Cup, Middleburg, the Foxfield races, and then add other races in the fall. We do the same thing, the harness racing. We have become kind of mecca for the country in that country racing. Our purses are better. The support from the VEA and from the VHPBA have really driven us. It also allowed us to survive during COVID. Basically, we ran at Gold Cup, us and Middleburg, we ran it during the COVID pandemic without any spectators. But we're able to provide that opportunity for horsemen to keep going through that period. The owners stayed in. The trainers kept jobs going. It was a dark, there were not a lot of cheering as the horses came to the finish, but we got it done. And so coming out of that, it's been a little bit of a challenge, but the crowds are back. And this is the first year I think we're really fully recovered from the pandemic, from that effort.
I'll spare you my gray games rant. I'll save that for later in the show because it's good to hear you tip the legislature for what they have done so far. We need a little more out of them, but we won't go down that road just yet. But, yeah, the Gold Cup established. It's a 100-year-old event, over 100 years. Since 1980, it's been in its current home. You have the big, you know, before we had the Secretariat statue in Virginia, we had Saluda, who was a saluter, who was like a 7-time winner, just a super. I was doing a little bit of research on this. I'm tickled about the 1988 edition, which was won by a horse by the name of Van Sedek. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Winner Van Sedek, yes.
Van Sedek. Winner by 110 lengths by 25 seconds, and the rider was a high school sophomore at the time.
Yes.
I mean, that's you never know what to expect there.
That's true, and it certainly went off the form. But, you know, that was a freak of nature and the conditions it came to. But Von Sedek was a phenomenal horse. You know, the timber horses are kind of freaks of nature. They don't follow the page so well. And so finding them is an exploratory thing. And when you find one like that, like Von Sedek, and, you know, they capture the hearts of everybody, not just race goers. They capture the hearts of all the people that are non-horsemen as well. And you know, become the legends that they are.
The Virginia Gold Cup in the Plains next week. Let's talk about Foxfield a little bit here in Charlottesville this afternoon. I mentioned the two horse in the sixth race. That is Welshman, who was owned by Harold Sonnyby, who we had on the show a couple weeks ago. He's entered in the race named after his Eclipse Award-winning horse, Goodnight Shirt, as well as the Daniel Van Cleef, the two features on the card. That's a $75,000 stakes race. That's in the Daniel Van Cleef. So Jack Fisher loaded. He has three in each of those races.
Right. Yeah, and you always, when you see Jack's name on the card and his horses, you know they're prepped. You know they're ready to go. We're really excited about the addition to the Foxfield races. The VEA and the VHPBA have been so helpful in getting that done. But Sonny Vaya is the quintessential horseman in Virginia. Love him to death. He with his Goodnight Shirt, he really established that fan base. And now coming back with Welshman, you know, the sentimental favorite, obviously, in that regard.
Yeah, good luck to Bernard Dalton, who has a tough job. He's got to deliver that winner today at Foxfield because everybody wants to see that moment, not for 93-year-old Harold Sonnyby. Al, have a great day at the races at Foxfield, and we'll talk to you next. The BTA Awards are next week as well, so up at the Plains. We'll talk to you next week as well. Have a great day at the Foxfield races and the Gold Cup next Saturday.
Thanks, Nick. Really appreciate it. Take
Al Griffin joining us on his way to Foxfield. I appreciate him hanging out in Charlottesville a little bit to make sure we had a good, clear signal to talk about. Post time at Foxfield, 12:30. Let's recap those Middleburg races. The Middleburg Hunt Cup last week, we talked about the veteran of the group, which is 14-year-old Skudik, who won his first time over jumps back before Colonial Down shut down. Actually, he won an allowance race in April of 2014 at Colonial Downs, and a four-horse field in the Middleburg Hunt Cup for this Skudik, who had family ties, Cracker Factory, and Lap of the Gods to contend with. Track announcer Tony Bentley has the call of Skudik's win in the Middleburg Hunt Cup.
They're over the final. Skudik in front by 2.5 as the whips come out. Cracker Factory, Family Tree to the outside. Here they are in the Middleburg chute. Skudik has the lead. Cracker Factory on the outside. Family Tree win 16. Skudik home in front in the Middleburg hunt.
Yeah, nice win there. Good crowd out there to welcome him back to the winner's circle. Three times did Jack Fisher and jockey Graham Maud, or here's the thing. I'm going to do this probably several times as we talk about steeplechase racing. Thoroughbreds or jockeys, steeplechase racing, they're riders. And it's an easy mistake to make. But, yeah, the rider Graham Waters delivering the win there. But he wasn't done yet, because following that race, they ran the Temple Gwathney, a grade two, that had a field of eight going as they dropped the flag. Tony Bentley also has the call of Snap Decision, a horse that we talked about last week in the Temple Gwathney, the feature last week at Glenwood Park at Middleburg.
So a Snap Decision all alone now in front by about eight. Then comes Awakened and Zombiel Champion, closing in on $1 million in earnings. Graham Waters takes a look and likes what he sees. Snap Decision in front, knowing the arc on for the place.
Yeah, that's the call there of the Temple Gwathney, and congratulations to those connections as well. That's Jack Fisher and Bruton Street U.S., the owner's owner entity there. Graham Waters rode both of those winners. He had a very good day at Middleburg. Here were his comments after the races.
Back-to-back wins in the feature, pretty good day. Jack Fisher set you up pretty well.
Yeah, look, they're the two best horses of my career. Skudik at 14 years of age. I mean, you'd need to look up the statistics. That must be 14 or 15 wins. He must be the most winless steeplechase, at least timber horse, and probably in U.S. history, but Snap Decision's on a different planet. Yeah, it's great to have him here, but look, they're the two best horses in my career anyway.
Great. What did you think about those rides? I mean, nice work, start of the year?
Yeah. Look, it's all for Snap. It's a build-up to the year by anyway, but it's great to get that win in there today like in previous years. So, no, we're very happy with today.
It's great to see these former Thoroughbreds have a great secondary career going over the jumps, and just a really good time at Middleburg. And full schedule of steeplechase racing in Virginia. It's really, I don't think it's any bigger anywhere in the country other than right here in Virginia when you talk about steeplechase racing. Let's work toward the Triple Crown here, because obviously the Kentucky Derby being next week, there was a lot of action on the track this morning. I got up early to watch some of these horses work and try and catch up with just all the movement. Last week was really the last serious work. These were just sort of tune-up works. It sort of started yesterday with Fierceness and Endlessly both working. Fierceness ran the four furlongs next to Agate Road in 48-4. Endlessly also worked yesterday, but this morning you saw Sierra Leone catching Freedom, worked with his stablemate, Domestic Product. Encino worked today. Doorknock worked today. Just a Touch worked today as well. West Saratoga also on the course today. Resilience, Catalytic, Grandmo the First, all these horses entered in the Derby. T.O. Password was a bit washy this morning. You heard Rosie Napravnik, who actually was on the Off to the Races TV show back in the day, do some commentary. Did not really like what she saw out of T.O. Password, the automatic entry out of Japan. They did hold a NTRA press conference on Thursday. I had the opportunity to tune in and even ask a couple of questions. One of them I asked Todd Pletcher, which is basically, Todd always brought a squad to the Kentucky Derby. He's won two of them with Always Dreaming. For the moment, I failed to remember the other one. But I asked Todd, he usually brings three and four. I think one year he had five that were nearly possible, nearly had like a quarter of the Kentucky Derby 20-horse field. And I asked him, what would you kind of rather have? Would you rather have multiple tries, or would you just rather have the big horse? Here's what Todd had to say.
Well, it's all about showing up with the right one. Honestly, a little disappointed that we aren't better represented. I thought, you know, maybe we zigged when we should have zagged in a couple of the prep races we chose. But, you know, it's also encouraging to be here with a horse that's potentially the favorite and coming off a very impressive win in the Florida Derby. So hopefully it's a case of bringing the right one as opposed to bringing several.
Fierceness, of a lot of consensus out there that if he runs his race, he's the one to beat. If something goes a little awry or he doesn't show up, which he has shown to do early in his career, that kind of opens the door for everybody else. The only horse that really is giving him a lot of challenge for that favorite status, and well, by the way, the draw is tonight. Churchill Downs opens tonight. They'll do the draw between 7:15 and 7:45. Caitlin Free, who hosts Colonial Signal, is, I think I heard this week, she's going to be involved in that broadcast as well, which will probably be like on FanDuel TV. You can watch it on Twin Spires, KentuckyDerby.com. They're going to have dry conditions, even though it's raining now in Louisville, as I understand it. They'll have dry conditions tonight as they do the draw on the new Paddock Terrace up there. Sierra Leone, who will have Tyler Gaffney aboard for trainer Chad Brown. If you remember, in the Bluegrass Stakes, took forever to load. So the question is going to be, if it took them so long to load in the Bluegrass, what's it going to be like at the Kentucky Derby when you have 160,000 fans and you're trying to load this horse? This is what Chad Brown had to say about most contentious part of his race, which will be the load.
Sierra Leone visited the starting gate at Churchill the last 2 days. He's done quite well. He had a little bit of a longer session yesterday with the starter, Scott Jordan, who I know very well, worked with him a bit. And towards the end of the session, he was very pleased with him. I brought him right back today just for good measure, and it was a pretty quick schooling session because he just walked in and out a couple times with no issues. So I feel like we're in really good shape.
So trainer Chad Brown there with Sierra Leone. Getting a little work. I did not know you could actually work with the actual starter. How about that? Maybe a good opportunity for Sierra Leone. If loads quickly, loads properly, will absolutely be a threat. Big, long, striding horse and one to consider for the Kentucky Derby. We mentioned earlier, Todd Pletcher, he's just bringing one horse when he usually brings multiples. Brad Cox is bringing multiples this year. He has Encino, he has Just a Touch, and of course, he has Sierra Leone. He has won the Kentucky Derby before. He won it with Mandaloon, who ended up being first after the disqualification of Baffert's horse back in 2021. So he was sort of declared. He does have a Kentucky Derby win, but he didn't really get the opportunity to enjoy the win. He wasn't the winner on the day. It took a couple of weeks before it was discovered when that Medina Spirit had a positive. And so he was asked, what would it be like to really win the Kentucky Derby?
The Derby, you know, it's a race that there's a lot of excitement, a lot of buildup. There's no other race in North America like it. And, you know, I think that we're trying to win this race to experience the thrill of victory, and we've yet to do that. So, I've always said I feel like there's a Derby with my name on it. I haven't experienced winning the Derby, so looking forward to it. Hopefully next Saturday will be the day. I don't know what it feels like, and looking forward to hopefully experiencing it someday.
Yeah, Brad Cox with his flocks headed to the Kentucky Derby starting gate next Saturday. So that's our update on the Kentucky Derby. As we go to break here, we'll have the original mint juleps, the clovers. the original writers of the song One Mint Julep, Take Us in the Break. Started off with Juleps. We're ending our first segment with Juleps as well. And maybe an opportunity to get the recipe from me. I've put it up on Facebook if anybody's looking to get my Kentucky Derby Julep recipe. You're listening to Off to the Races, powered by theracingbiz.com. When we get back, Frank Vespi will lead us out of break. Liz McKnight, John Piazek. Up next, Evan Hammond in about 15 minutes. You're listening to Off to the Races, powered by theracingbiz.com. I stole a kiss and
then another. Horses are at the gate and ready for action this spring at Shenandoah Downs in Woodstock. A big seven-week season of harness horse racing continues every Saturday and Sunday at 1 o'clock through May 19th. This Saturday, it's a Kentucky Derby Day celebration with harness racing at 2 o'clock, a fancy hat contest, live music with the Eli Cook Band, mint juleps, and miniature horse races. Plus, fans can bet the Kentucky Derby and the entire card from Churchill Downs. For details, visit shenandoahdowns.com.
Nothing compares to a horse. They inspire greatness, command respect. Because Virginia's horse industry isn't just racing and farming. It's built on the skills, labors, and passions of dedicated people working in every industry throughout our state. Horses fuel the economy, create jobs, support thousands of families, and even make dreams come true. Virginia's economy wins with horses. Find out more at virginiahorseracing.com.
Horses are at the gate and ready for action this spring at Shenandoah Downs in Woodstock. A big seven-week season of harness horse racing continues every Saturday and Sunday at 1 o'clock through May 19th. This Saturday, it's a Kentucky Derby Day celebration with harness racing at 2 o'clock, a fancy hat contest, live music with the Eli Cook Band, mint juleps, and miniature horse races. Plus, fans can bet the Kentucky Derby and the entire card from Churchill Downs. For details, visit shenandoahdowns.com.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Frank Vespi here on Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. Appreciate you joining us here on a Saturday morning. We're talking a little bit of jumps action. Nick was talking about the Gold Cup earlier in Foxfield, and the Virginia steeplechase scene is maybe a little more well-known, maybe a little more glamorous, but as somebody in Maryland said to me not so long ago, for Marylanders, home is where the Hunt Cup is, and today the Hunt Cup takes place, 126th running of the Maryland Hunt Cup, and going to bring in Liz McKnight. She's co-chair of the Hunt Cup and a Hunt Cup winning rider as well. Liz, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Frank. Thanks for having me. It's the 127th running. Sorry to start you off on the wrong foot, but it's 127th.
According to the overnight, it's the 126th.
It's the 127th running. So, okay. Anyhow, on our program, anyway, it's 127th. Anywho,
Glad to be exactly here. So I wanted to start with this. You are, as I mentioned, did win this race as a rider. What is that experience like? What does that feel like?
Oh, it's magical. It's something that people, especially amateur jockeys, aspire for their whole life. And I was very fortunate and had a lovely horse, and it's a dream come true. And once you've done it, there's nothing ever will take it away.
That's right. That's one you can take with you for a long time. Wait, what is the Hunt Cup? What does it mean to Maryland? You know, I mentioned what somebody had said to me, that home is where the Hunt Cup is. What does it mean to Maryland and Maryland horse folks?
Well, it's such a historical tradition that people really, really appreciate the history behind it, and that it's the same course and the same fences. There are 22 fences and it's 4 miles, and it's our little triple crown, because we have the My Lady's Manor, and then we have the Grand National in Butler, and then this is the final triple crown, the Maryland Hunt Cup. So it's very popular and very prestigious.
Maryland Hunt Cup taking place today in Reisterstown. And talk about the Hunt Cup. You know, this is a race that really is considered, I mean, I think is known worldwide and considered an extraordinarily difficult race. Why is that?
Well, it's a true test of rider and horse because of the length of the race and the obstacles that are like almost 5 feet in some places. So it's a test of endurance and a test of speed and a test of agility over jumps. Really, the good jumpers usually wind up in the money.
4 miles over the timber is, that's long, isn't it? I mean, aren't these races typically more like three and a quarter kind of thing?
Most of them are three or three and a quarter. The Gold Cup, I believe, is 4 miles also.
Okay.
And the Pennsylvania Hunt Cup. But this is the same course, and it's just, you know, history with some serious tradition in it. And the gentleman wanted to have see who had the best horse.
And they still do. Talking with Liz McKnight, co-chair of the Maryland Hunt Cup. Maryland Hunt Cup taking place today in Reisterstown. We'll go with Liz's numbers here. 127th running of the Hunt Cup. And, you know, one of the things we talk about in flat racing quite often, Liz, is, you know, what to do with horses when they're done racing, because racing on the flat, some horses are done when they're very young, but most are done by the time they're six or seven. And one answer is they can go over the jumps. We've got Vintage Vinny in today's Hunt Cup is 15 and Rocket Star Red is 12. So you can, how old can these horses compete at a high level to?
I'd say you're running out of time after 15, but can be a long career if you've been on the racetrack from 6 years old to 15. So it's a great, some horses really thrive over the jumps and out in the open and not confined to a track, so to say. But yeah, Vintage Vinny's won it twice, and he's up for another run at it.
It's kind of a neat race, it seems like to me. I mean, I'm clearly no expert here, but you got Vintage Vinny, who won it 2 years in a row, and then Without More Ado, who won it last year. So you have kind of the last three winners squaring off. That has to be kind of a neat thing to see.
Absolutely. I mean, they both horses have proven themselves over this course. And both are real contenders. So, but there's a lot of contenders in this race, and it should be really amazing. We just hope for the best turnout and everybody to be safe and enjoy it.
Hopefully, everybody gets back in one piece here. Maryland Hunt Cup taking place this afternoon, post time 4:00. Obviously, it's going to be too late now for people to get out to this year's Hunt Cup, but if they want to know more or want to watch the race online, is there a website we can send them to?
There is. The National Steeplechase Association live streams it.
Okay.
That is the best way to watch it. And then we will have pictures up after the race on the Maryland Hunt Cup website.
All right, and that website is MarylandHuntCup.com, MarylandHuntCup.com. Learn all about the Hunt Cup, the third of Maryland's Timber Triple Series, which began 2 weeks ago with the My Lady's Manor, the Grand National last week, and here today finishing up Maryland Hunt Cup in Reisterstown. Liz McKnight, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out of your very busy Saturday to talk with us here on Off to the Races.
All right. Thank you. And I hope to talk to you soon. Thanks.
Sounds great. Good luck today. All right, Nick, that's the Maryland Hunt Cup taking place this afternoon in Reisterstown, Maryland.
Yeah, my buddy Dan is actually on his way up there. Actually up there, a guy I play basketball with. So, yeah, great to have him. And we have John Piazzik. I think I got finally the pronunciation right.
I'm going to ask him when he comes on how to do it for us. And Nick, one thing we did want to touch on here, Preakness Future Wager taking place started yesterday. And while Fierceness and Sierra Leone are getting all the attention for the Kentucky Derby, it's actually Muth is the morning line favorite in the Preakness future. The Bob Baffert trainee will not run in the Kentucky Derby because Bob Baffert and Churchill Downs are in a little tiff, as they have been for the last couple of years. And but Muth, who won the Santa Anita Derby, is the morning line favorite for the Preakness future wager.
Yeah, I just want Dwayne Lucas to bring Just Steele. I want to see Dwayne Lucas at 88 years old. And he loves the Preakness, so I think if Just Steele is in shape, either him or Caesar Gray, his two horses, Caesar Gray and AE on the Derby list.
You just want to talk hoops with Dwayne. I know what that's
We can do
about.
That, too. We can do that, too. John's ready.
Is John ready?
Yes.
All right, then. John? Pronounce your last
you
name for us.
Piasek.
There you go, Nick Piasek.
So yeah, got it right.
Nick has been wrestling with your name for quite a while, so I think maybe hopefully he's going to win now. So, John, good morning. Just a couple minutes here. Wanted to touch base with you. Let's talk about the eighth race at Laurel. This little segment, by the way, presented by our friends at the Maryland Jockey Club. Nine race card at Laurel Park today. The eighth is a third level allowance. It's the feature. Six furlongs on the main track. Nice big field of nine entered here. What do you see in the eighth race, John?
I think number three, Tenebris, on top. He's been facing better in his last two starts. He had been on a three-race winning streak over the winter. Two starts back, ran a game third off a six-day layoff behind Post Time, who, of course, came back to win the Carter and who was nominated for the Churchill Downs Stakes. We could see him next Saturday along with all the Derby favorites. Then last time out, Tenebris ran, I thought, a pretty big race at this level on April 6th. He battled with No Sense early on, a nice hard-knocking Jersey bred. Couldn't quite hold off the ever-lovable Threes over Deuces. Those two battled down the stretch. Tenebris ended up losing by a head. Nonetheless, a big effort. He ran a career-best Brisnet figure for the second straight race of a 98. Tenebris has nice tactical speed. I think Rominski is going to show speed from the inside. If Tenebris can avoid getting into a duel with him, kind of just present from his outside, he'll get a great trip, pounce, and draw off to victory.
All right, there you go. Tenebris to get the money, the three horse, 3-1 on the morning line there. Nice card today, John. Just give us a quick comment on the card. We got a couple of interesting maiden tilts that that we're looking forward to.
Yeah, race one, maidens, 3, 4, 5-year-olds, 6 furlongs on the main track. Two big money first time stars in here. Number six, Riceville, a Baffert expat making his debut for Brittany Russell, cost $610,000 as a yearling. And those horses, as you know, Candy Very Boom or Bust will probably either win or lose by five. Hub is a $300,000 purchase last year. He's making his debut for Anthony Ferrier off a gaggle of bullet workouts. Ronaldo Boca Chica gets the mount on him in place of the injured Jevion Toledo. I went against both of them and picked number five, Live Happy, who I thought ran a nice race on the lead last time I got involved in a speed duel, faded and finished fourth in what ended up being a very nice maiden race. Quince Brew came back to win his next start impressively and could be a future stakes horse. A Teen Goss Twin, the runner-up, also came back to win. I think Live Happy is going to have a nice trip on the lead, and I think his experience is going to play in his favor. Race three is also a maiden race, going 5.5 furlongs on the grass. It is the 3-year-old debut of Enzo, the younger brother of Caravelle and Witty. I picked against him too, and went with number five, take the fifth, who is one of two in here who has run on the grass this year. Ran a nice race at Fairgrounds last time out, had a bit of traffic trouble, but still ran on well when clear in a race in which the pace did not fall apart at all. It was hard to close into. Lost by less than three lengths. Ran decent figure. Think his recent grass experience is going to play into his favor, and hopefully he goes off at a good price. Also in here is number six, Wow, What a Party for Chuck Lawrence, the half-brother to Penn Mile winner. Wow, What a Summer.
Wow, What a Summer was 88-1 when he won the Penn Mile. And then the next year, Chucky sent out a horse in the Penn Mile who ran second or third at 90-1. So he likes the Penn Mile. All right, good stuff. Couple of price horses there from John Piasek plus Tenebris in the feature. John, thanks for joining me this morning. Good luck at the races today.
Thank you, Frank. Take care.
All right, Nick. That's Laurel. That's the Maryland Hunt Cup. That's all I got.
That's plenty. It's all stacked up on top of each other. Frank, great job. And Derby Show next week. Just wanted to quickly mention Andy Beyer next week on Derby Day. You won't want to miss that. Derby Bill next week on Derby Day. That's about as far as a gambit on handicapping as you can have. So, you'll want to tune in next week for those two shows. Frank, great job.
Big show. Yep, show next week. Excited about that. So, good stuff, Nick. Have a great rest of the show, and we'll be talking.
Yeah, headed out to Fox Field afterwards. So, yeah. Draw tonight, of course, at Churchill Downs. And I did want to clean up something from earlier in the show. Brad Cox has Catching Freedom, Encino, and Just a Touch. Chad Brown has Domestic Product in Sierra Leone. I knew I was making a mistake as soon as I said it. So just to clear that up in case you're more of a trainer handicapper, we'll have Evan Hammond here in just a few moments. Wanted to give you an update because this is very critical to the economic model that has worked so well in Virginia racing over the last few years. Touched upon it a little bit about this bill that is still looming in the Virginia General Assembly, and it is something, these gray games, it is totally unfair that the General Assembly, I can't believe it has gotten this far. Thank God the governor has stepped in and done something, at least to keep the conversation between the rails, because this gray game bill is just open season on these skill games, gray games, whatever you want to call them, that they went all the way to the Virginia Supreme Court and lost. So what do they get for their efforts for contesting it, for not doing it the right way, like the way horse racing did when HHR was approved? They get everything they want, is the way the General Assembly has stacked this up. And it is completely – I talked to my brother this week about my brother Mike, who knows a little bit about the convenience store business and how big theft is involved with these stores. Just let's throw some gray gaming on top of it and see how this thing works. It is happening too darn quick. I once worked in local government, had a supervisor, a chairman of the board, who always said, you don't want to shock the system. This would shock the system. Change should not come this quick to an economic model that has worked so well over the years. I couldn't believe the comment by Aaron Rouse out of Virginia Beach, where he says, and this is an article everybody should read that is in the rvamag.com about gray games. I stand with small business in every corner of the Commonwealth, urging the governor to do the right thing by small business and sign this bill. I don't think you do, because you're not standing by the small business that supports Virginia racing that has been around for centuries, and you're not standing by Eagle Point Farm or Leanne Hester or Pat Noosh or Biglick Farmer and all these other small businesses that are relying on this and the participants that race at Colonial Downs. So, Governor, we appreciate that you stepped in, at least took another look, and having people take another look at this, because it is just too much, too darn fast. That's my rant on gray games this week. And sorry you had to hear that, Evan, on Off to the Races this morning, but it's sort of a big issue. The bigger item that is before us is the Kentucky Derby draw. And you can just imagine, I can't wait till they do the draw, because I get to throw away about a ream of paper of notes and past performance sheets that I've collected. the Kentucky Derby, the biggest race, and so we want to go to Evan Hammond, who is a great University of Kentucky grad. And where is he? He's in Vermont right now. Evan, good morning.
Good morning. I am in Vermont visiting with my daughter on my way to a what else would you do on Saturday before the Derby? Go to a maple festival, but have no fear. I will be back in the Bluegrass Tuesday and ready to enjoy Derby Week, which actually it's more than just the race. If you're a handicapper, you know, like to bet on the horses like I do, that first week of Churchill Downs is just fantastic. You have a ton of stakes. You have a ton of good horses on the grounds that have all had, you know, maybe one start at Keeneland, et cetera. And everybody is in Louisville. Everybody wants to win. It's a great handicapping card the Tuesday through Saturday night.
I always say this time of year, I have got to find a way to – I haven't been to a Derby since 2012. I've got to find a way to get back there because it is. And the festival starts long before today, which is opening night at Churchill Downs. Evan Hammond joining us, the former editorial director of the Blood Horse, and still does some work and is probably one of the few people that will be sad to see the old Pimlico Grandstand go when it eventually does. What do you make of this year's Derby field? Is it two horses and everybody else? Is it, you know, the great story behind, like, you know, Dwayne Lucas, 88 years old, coming back with possibly two horses if Seize the Gray gets in? What do you make of this year's Derby?
You know, you never, again, you can look at it all you want to. The draw tonight will help sift out some. Personally, I mean, I'm going to be kind of boring. I think Fierceness is the fastest horse. I've gone back and watched all the replays a couple of times. Florida Derby was fantastic. Again, he had everything his way. When he didn't have everything his way in the Holy Bull, of course, he kind of floundered. But I think, just based on what I've seen visually, he is the best horse. I think talking with Frank Angst, who is now the editorial director at Blood Horse, he has gone through several of the speed figures, and the interesting horses there are the Japanese horse, and oddly enough, Wayne Lucas's horse seems to be moving in the right direction. So after his second place finish in the Arkansas Derby. So he would be one that I would be taking a longer look at this week.
So what happens if, what does Thanksgiving dinner perhaps look like in the Asmussen household in the event that the Lucas horse there, and I always get Just a Touch because they're both Justifies. I'm trying in my mind. Here, you hear me shuffling the sheets here. But what happens if Keith Asmussen edges out Trank Phantom, denying Asmussen another Kentucky Derby, or the other way around, that Trank Phantom wins and edges out the Lucas horse, where his son is the jockey? What does that Thanksgiving look like, perhaps?
Well, I think it would be okay. I think they would both still be tugging over the wishbone. But as a father, I think as a father, you always want your son to excel. So, I mean, if he were to win the Derby, I think Steve would be thrilled. And I know his whole family, his grandfather and grandmother Marilyn, they'd be over the moon if he won. So, I as a father, I you always want your kids to succeed. So, I wouldn't think that would be there'd be any animosity there.
No, I don't think so either. I think if Asmussen Exacto would be cause for cheers. The West Saratoga is a horse trained by Larry DeMeritt. He is the first trainer, African-American, to bring a horse to the Derby since 1989 when Hank Allen finished sixth with Northern Wolf. Saw that horse out on the track this morning. There's so many storylines in this Derby. I mean, when we heard a little bit from Pletcher and Brown and Cox earlier in the show, what are some of the storylines? Phil D'Amato brings Stronghold out of California for his first Derby starter, you know, very veteran trainer. What are the storylines that are going to be intriguing to you this week?
I think it's going to be a kind of a waiting game. I think with the new HISA rules that were put in a couple of years ago and the extensive vet work being done, taking a really keen eye at the horses. You know, last year there were several scratches, including the favorite Forte. So I think you need to watch that carefully because those vets are all over those horses, and if they see even one hair going the wrong way, they will go to the trainer and say, you know, if you don't scratch the horse, we will. So I think that will be you know, kind of a waiting, watching game from today until Friday morning.
Saffy Joseph back in the Derby with Catalytic. I mean, that is something, you know, last year had that bizarre scratch of Peter Begso's horse where Begso showed up at the Louisville airport with his family and had to turn around and go back, learning of the scratch of his horse. It turned out to be just an environmental issue, but it took a while for it to pan out, and they lost their window. So Fierceness is the early pick for you so far.
Watching the races, Sierra Leone is a standout. But if you had to pick one or the other, I would lean towards Fierceness. You mentioned Phil D'Amato's horse. You know, visually, to me, his Santa Anita Derby was as good as any, but then you go back and look at the chart and tear down the times, and it just really wasn't that fast. It's when I handicap the Derby and any other race, really, I work from the finish line back. I look at the final, you know, quarter, final eighth times, looking to find horses that can really finish. The Santa Anita Derby was just a really slow race. So, and, you know, he beat a Baffert horse, which is always good if you beat a Bob Baffert horse, but that wasn't Bob's number one 3-year-old. So, I liked him visually, but I just don't think he's fast enough.
Thanks, Evan, for joining us. Have a safe trip back to Kentucky from Vermont. Want to thank everybody that was part of the show, Al Griffin, Daryl Wood, Liz McKnight, John Piazek, Evan Hammond just moments ago. Andy Beyer, Derby Bill next week on Off to the Races, post time, 10 o'clock.